89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, yes, Jatinho is a great word, allegedly, that Brazilian, that means the powerful magic that comes in dangerous times. I'll be giving a free call on that topic via the Shift Network on Saturday, and you can sign up for free at coyotenetworknews.com. So, yes, oh, allies, oh, agents of Weiwei Coyotes and ancient revered Coyote, here we are. And we will be bringing in my fantastic colleague Daniel Gemario in moments, but let me also just honor Edward Snowden, who did a great interview with Katie Couric. She gets 2 gold stars for going to Moscow and then being kind of, you know, whiny. But he was so great, you know, and she was saying, what if Putin wraps you up and gives you as a present to Trump? And he goes, that would be life-threatening, but on the other hand, it would free me from people's nefarious suspicion that I'm in cahoots with the Russian intelligence. And then she kept saying, you know, are you afraid? Should we be afraid? And Snowden, very calm and collected, said, we should not be afraid, but we should be ready. Oh, yes, all right, so we're taking that as a cue, and we love the metaphors. When Edward Snowden was born, June 21st, 1983, at 4:42 a.m. in the morning, Elizabeth City, North Carolina, the moon was at 13 plus Scorpio. And the Sabian symbol for that is telephone linemen at work installing links to other realities, the cosmic switchboard. We go, you're doing a good job, lad. Yes, you are. So, yeah, there's many things that we want to bring before the council here as we convene, and let me introduce Daniel Gemario, longtime ally, fellow astro mytho guiding meta narrative of now, as we will address what can give us pluck and jauntiness in the face of the unfurling horror, the cartoon of supervillains, cunning but sociopathically stupid people being, you know, nominated. Ah, there we go. So welcome, Daniel.
Hello there, Caroline. Great to be back on the air with you. It's here about 6 a.m. here, and I'm watching the full moon setting over the city here. So it's quite a powerful time period. Oh my God.
It is, and there's so many places we want to go. And, you know, as we are in accord, you know, when we were last convening ago, clearly this election and all of unfurling life says astrology is not so much for prediction as in announcing what is available to be worked with, right? And that's, I think, where we'll kind of go in. I liked Mercury retrograde on December 19th. We were all kind of hoping the Electoral College convening then would reverse, and I go, no, okay. But it does give the power of reversal and delay, you know, available to us, going slow that down, there we go. So as you'd said, you know, as we said backstage, yes, all planets forward now, here we go, and it is spooky.
Yes.
It's a spooky.
I've been actually putting some attention on that phenomenon. It isn't often spoken of. It's a phenomenon considerably more rare than Mercury retrograde that I think people talk too much about. Well, we have all planets in direct motion. So some years where it doesn't happen at all. Actually, we have a particularly long period from the 8th of January to the 5th of February. And it's worth actually for a moment speculating on what can happen in all planets direct. Since there's no retrograde planets, there aren't any planets that are either off stage or going through a transformation from one archetype to another. And so each planet has the opportunity, as a symbol, of course, here, to be completely straightforward, I guess you could say. And one of my thoughts on this is that I can't imagine a better time to pierce through the matrix, to be able to, all the different levels of that, whether it's, you know, the internet or the whole fake news thing is a quite an interesting phenomena. And basically things are being exposed, but yet it's difficult to sort it out if you just use the mainstream sources. But you can clearly see into the deceptions, I think, right now.
And what's adorable, again, the value of astrology, this beautiful language of our individual psyche and its connection to the collective, there we go. And so, team, you don't have to believe in it. It's just an announcement. So, for instance, as we begin this show overhead in Berkeley, hi, team, it's 17 plus Aquarius overhead. The Sabian symbol is a man's secret motives are being publicly unmasked. And we go, yeah, all right, let's go for that. I do love that Saturn is, you know, again, slow it down, is exactly opposite Donald Trump's sun right now. And Saturn's Sabian symbol, the Steve Eardley version, is the crown and torch of the Statue of Liberty, the necessity to defend democracy from tyranny. And we go, oh, it's all, the gods are trying to make it very simple for us, very simple. So this slow way down, slow it all down, you know, may bad projects be slowed down, may they be too expensive to, you know, too expensive, yeah, exactly. I guess that's really the place to go. And there is a lot of rousingness. People are like, oh, whaley, but, you know, I invite everybody to, you know, search, you know, Indivisible, which is a handbook for citizen participation, which Barack Obama's quite skookum speech said, all right, everybody participate now, there we go. And that's why I'm brewing kind of the birth of citizen trickster in all of our hearts. Yes. So yeah, and we're inaugurating a guiding story no matter what, you know, so wherever you want to go, of course. But we have this beautiful, I mean, mm-hmm. So here's the sky story, which is so beautiful in contrast. You know, Venus and Neptune conjoined almost exact to the minute right now, to the second, at 10 Pisces, Venus in the sign of her exaltation. Beautiful sight after sunset. Again, doesn't require believing anything. Just watch after sunset. There's Venus blazing high in the western sky, and just to the left is a little fainter Mars. Do you want to, and again, Neptune's sometimes called the higher octave of Venus. So the power of symbols and dreams, you know, and to draw forth the best of people is apparently available, you know, and it's in the inauguration chart. I don't know. How can you guide us in this one, Daniel?
Well, a couple of things here. If I could just for a moment go back to the situation with Trump's chart.
Yeah.
It's to me, something even more remarkable is that we're exactly at the time period where the transit of Saturn is on his moon and south node.
Right.
Okay. And to me, it's a time period where his past, he can't hide anything. Basically, there's a having to take responsibility for all that's happened before. Confronting limitations and boundaries relative to his past and his lineage. I look at that as a greater symbol that depending on whatever position you're taking, it's not going to be an easy time for him. Saturn on the moon south node, it's calling in everything he's ever done from the past and the repercussions of it. So, I mean, I wanted to just throw that in there.
Right. And here come the women. And just as a little aside thing, it's like there are so many people coming to Washington, D.C. for January 21st for the women's gathering and the men who love them. And it's a story switch, right? Because so many women I hear from the West Coast, you know, who are ardent Hillary supporters, made their plane reservations and hotel reservations for her inauguration, right? But so now they're using them, but for a different story. Anyway, I just wanted to, you know, so you'd said before, you know, women will be his downfall. And what is that hungry, no amount of no amount of women can compensate for the lack of his mother, or God only knows. But anyway, yes. So,
well, the only women that support him are the women who support the patriarchy, and that's one of the sides of Venus in Cancer. When a man has that, the assumption that the women will be getting privileges and advantages by being with the patriarchal guys. And that's also a limitation point in his own chart, but it's what he's assumed and expected would guide it, would support his life. I think that story is coming to an end. And back to the sky, you know, there's one feature of this. I don't know whether that it makes a whole lot of sense to try to technically describe how Venus and Mars are working in the sky. It is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it does turn out that January 8th through the first week of March is the first time in 6.5 years that Venus and Mars are together in this portion of the evening sky. And it's we call it a sacred marriage configuration. But what comes to mind other than Neptune is the fact that situated right now, right in the middle of between the two of them, is Chiron. And what this does is it takes us all the way back to 1966, 1967, the last time that Chiron is in exactly the same place. And just using symbols here, one of the configurations that's happening in 2017 is Saturn square Chiron. And back in 1966, 67 was the time of the great Uranus-Jupiter conjunction. The Uranus-Pluto conjunction. And the Chiron, it's really about healing through ecstasy, through dreams, through visions, through ecstatic states. And this is like a standoff between the attempt to limit that and opening it back up. That we do have access to the dreams, to the ceremonies, to the visionary practices, to the ability to connect in with ecstatic states in different ways, through music, through dance, through story, through plants. You know, I mean, that was what came through back then, and now it's a recurrence of that same theme and the attempts to stop it.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly. No music, plants, and stories. It's like yes, everything backstage is trying to help heal the human's capacity for conscious kinship, and so there is an entheogenic renaissance. Not in your country, the Philippines, right, where that could get you killed.
Well, the biggest thing here is really not those. There's hardly any presence of that, except for the shamanic people that do it and are kind of out of sight. It's here the whole battle is against methamphetamine. I mean, there's a greater use of methamphetamine here than any place in Asia. Most of it coming from China.
I can't quite put this there. But what do you think is the toxic mimic attractor for methamphetamine in a place like the Philippines? And we could go to many other hardscrabble places. But you know what appropriate receptor is meth filling in a toxic way?
When you're dealing with a population that is very poor. It is without question the cheapest substance to initially start to feel good. And you know, people have to basically drive 3 hours through ridiculously bad traffic and pollution and the noise and the pollution and the overwhelming nature of the split between the rich and the poor here. It's basically a way, cheap beer and methamphetamine is the way to keep the population unconscious.
And I think I just breezed past an important thing that you said, which is the methamphetamine is coming from China.
A lot of it, yeah. It's easy to manufacture, but it's usually the Chinese underworld mafia that is doing most of it.
Right. So back to the tonic as the antidote for the toxic. You know, we go, yes, there is a huge, you know, ayahuasca, psilocybe mushrooms, microdosing, which is kind of a nice, Virgo Pisces kind of dynamic going just a little bit, just to put a little sparkle of genius around the edges. There we go. I mean, there's a lot of that going on. And the plants are, you know, recruiting and, you know, wanting to open hearts, as well as the music and the stories. And yeah, exactly. And so, you know, when you look at this time period and even look at the quirky, you know, inauguration chart, you know, if we were just sort of, I don't know, ordinary astrologers, we go, oh, that looks very beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's true on one level, although I love that on January 20th at noon in the Capitol building, there we go, the moon will be at 9 plus Scorpio, which I like, even though you told me that they changed the time on the back of the $100 bill, but the $100 bill used to have a time clock on it on the back that gave a time, and if you did a chart for America, it gave 9 Scorpio rising. The image for that is a fellowship supper reunites old comrades, and it's trining Neptune, you know, so there's a resilient, like, okay, team, you know, never mind the obvious dementors, or let's pay careful mind to them. But there is an inaugurating story of goodness and fellowship and renaissance and defiant joy, right?
A couple of things. Number one, I've never received a confirmation from anyone regarding that change of the time on the $100 bill. So I'm still, I don't know if there's a truth to that or not. Number two, the ancient astrologers, the ones that were really looking at the night sky, who were not aware of, say, Uranus and Pluto, yeah, they would look at that configuration in the sky as something quite beautiful. There's another piece of that that shifted in patriarchy that we might have a chance to get to in a moment that I think does weave into the larger backstory here. But modern astrologers are going to usually miss the way that looks in the evening sky, and they'll just immediately go to Uranus, Pluto, and Jupiter, which certainly is would be nobody's idea of something easy and beautiful. It's certainly a change producer from every level. Who knows what's going to happen? It's kind of like Jupiter is bringing the whole configuration on steroids. extreme unpredictability of Uranus, designed to break apart a foundation, and then Pluto, which takes us deeper into the unconscious and the shadow and the hidden material and the secrets and everything else. So it's like a double blowtorch going up and out and down and in on steroids.
On meth, just to keep the theme going. That's right.
And you throw that into it, and then it really goes off the rails.
Well, you know, again, you know, there's disaster against the stars, and consider, which means with the stars, and so I like, you know, Pluto. I think of it, well, we're both dancing with it right now. Woohoo! And there is loss. And you said, you know, a beloved dog disappeared and my beautiful dog is kind of hovering. But coyote, we don't know. And cats having a hard time. So I'm kind of running an animal hospice here. But I think also, you know, the Pluto cauldron, you know, and the, you know, it is kind of mission control and, you know, bubbling everything away from positive intrigue. You know, the utopian Fourier said in any ideal community we must allow for the passion for positive intrigue, because when people conspire to pull off something good, it draws on more elegant parts of the psyche. So there is that, you know, and then, you know, on the Sun-Pluto conjunction, many terrible things in the world, and the man in Fort Lauderdale Airport, whatever. So there's a volatility available, but part of where I want to dance with you and then spiral out into everybody is, you know, there are generous guidance being proffered from the kind of larger design, and we are encouraged. It behooves us to animate the desirable, lest we leave it by default to the, you know, the demonic. And I think the Pluto volatility says that is volatile in direct proportion to the force with which it's excluded, and pressure comes down and it erupts through this 23-year-old, you know, joined the National Guard, right? And Michael Moore was so great directing collective attention on this, because he's like, I don't want to normalize this gun violence, but what we should really be thinking about is this: his aunt said he was a good kid until he joined the National Guard, and Michael Moore saying you join the National Guard to make a few bucks and do domestic things, but he got sent to Iraq 3 times came back damaged, and I think that's the, you know, there's no personal crime, it's all a story of some collective thing that wants to be addressed. And then let me toss it back to you for this, you know, this fabulously beautiful full moon this morning, and for you, and you're on Friday the 13th. You're a day ahead of us. I love that. And this full moon, you know, sun at 22 Capricorn, moon at 22 Cancer, squaring Uranus and Ceres Demeter, goddess of the earth, and squaring Jupiter, you know, is right in that mix. So it's like, and it is the moon in her own sign. It's Big Mama, Earth Mama. Who is speaking? I mean, it's 70 degrees here in Washington, and it was 18 degrees 2 days ago, and it's going to be 18 again. It's like, whoa, warm, blustery after frigid, you know, and the Rex Tillerson nomination up before the Senate, you know, and is this how it all goes down? You know, it's very apocalyptic, you know, with the cartoon of supervillains and all. And we go, no, we want to. That's why we have Daniel here. We're going to encourage our...
If you want to just continue to look at the imagery that is really beautiful and inspiring, and again, I'm looking at it from the perspective of the sky, there's two additional features. One is this full moon, the closest full moon to Epiphany.
Ah.
In our school, in the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, the two most powerful moons of the year. There's a third that's kind of a close third, but there's the Vision Quest full moon, or the Aquarius full moon in August, usually in August. And then there's this one, which is, we call it the Magi full moon. It's the time period where the transmissions historically of the Magi, or all the different individuals throughout history who knew the sky and knew the different turning of the ages, this is where the transmission comes through at this point. It was actually under this full moon back in 1983 that I first received some guidance out in the desert at Joshua Tree from a large rock formation to actually birth this form of astrology. It was under that full moon. So it's been one of my two favorites ever since. If I had to put a third one in, it's the full moon that occurs with Spica, which is the one that originally had to do with the greatest glory and radiance of the sacred feminine, the antipode to Spica going into the underworld. And I was thinking about that this morning because the other augur in the sky that I was looking at this morning, Jupiter conjunct Spica. And again, Spica representing in a stellar form. It's like the star stand-in for Venus. Spica is the star that represents the central mysteries of the sacred feminine. So we've got Jupiter right with her, which it's also my own personal star. It's the one that was rising over the eastern horizon when I was born, so I really love her very much.
Oh, and it's conjunct my sun.
It stems all the way back to the ancient traditions of the sacred feminine, and in 2 months the full moon will be there, that's the Spica celebration. It used to be the one that occurred 5,000 years ago at Candlemas, and this Brigid's pre-Christian Brigitte from Ireland is where that whole tradition actually began.
And then just to go back, and so much of what you just said, yes, the closest full moon to Epiphany, right? We love Epiphany when the Magi arrive. But I just learned from Max Dashu, wonderful woman scholar, keeper of suppressed archives, in a really great way, that the word Epiphany comes from Belfana. And Belfana was before Santa Claus, before Christianity. Belfana was the woman who came down everyone's hearth and chimney and distributed presents. And once I heard, I go, Belfana, I didn't know that. And once I heard that, I saw all these great pictures of women in Italy all dressed up as Belfanas, you know, with brooms and, you know, chimney sweep things. And anyway, so there's that too, you know, anyway, I just wanted to bring...
How is that spelled?
I'm sorry, say what?
How is that spelled?
I think it's Belphana, Belfana.
Oh, wow, interesting.
No, we're all learning. We all need each other. I love that thing. So, yeah, no, and you know, without hubris, you know, but really to distribute to everybody, this powerful full moon, you know, and you, you know, this one that you said you gave birth to this in 1983, the part of your teaching, and may it be for all of us, what are we giving birth to? And I do feel, you know, like I've been brewing because I have different online things, and I'm doing another series of courses for the Shift Network, and I go, okay, Trickster, it's got to be, you know, constantly experimenting. And I go, all right, I'm birthing the birth of citizen trickster, meaning, you know, the dedicated to collective well-being trickster part of us, eager to bound from our hearts onto the world stage. And that's what I'm kind of working on and culling. And, the call to be engaged, is out there and rousing. And that's part of our dynamic, to align with the beauty that is being proffered against the contrast of, you know, how do we metabolize our conniption fits, going, really, the CEO of Exxon named Rex the king, right? Lying now in front of Congress, going, oh, climate change, you know, I can't answer that. Is that because you don't want to, says the querent, or you don't have the information? Well, some of both, ha ha ha. It's like, no, these are just smart ass, you know, cunning men who are missing the entire point of life, but we've been rewarding them with gigantic amounts of money and everything. But it is a cartoon, right? I mean, if you could dream it, going, imagine, no, it couldn't be that the CEO of Exxon would be, you know, nominated to be Secretary of State. No,
or Jefferson Sessions, Attorney General.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is a nightmare, again, villain cartoon. And, and there's Coretta Scott King's powerful letter in 1986, saying in great detail, typewritten, of why Jefferson Sessions should not be appointed to a federal judgeship, about, you know, the nefarious things and the biases and the, you know, violence. Anyway, it delineates it in great detail, and we're about to have Martin Luther King's birthday, for goodness sake, you know, in a couple of days. And Jefferson Sessions, it's each one is sort of like bush, but however. That's right. That's why we have the likes of yourself on, because, again, to guide us back to this dynamic. And, Jupiter opposite Uranus, yeah, anything could happen, right? It's all in Pluto's cauldron. And that's why but Saturn, you know, is trining Uranus at disciplined wildness. And so I like it for our team, for all of us. You know, I engage my friend's dream, and which in a dream, there's a bad figure stirring a cauldron, and a voice in the dream says to the dreamer, "You must take hold of the stirring stick and stir the cauldron in the other direction." And so she slowly makes her way to the cauldron, and the minute she touches the stick, the evil figure dissipates, kind of Neptunes into the air, and then she slowly begins stirring the cauldron in the other direction. And I like this. O-team, it's such a physical metaphor, like my own little hand right now is making stirring motions, you know, everybody out there in radio democracy land, you know, going, stir the cauldron in the other direction. You know, may the women's march be also the witchcraft, the wise woman craftiness, craft, the power that comes from dedication, the power of metaphor is coming back. But it's so perfect because Saturn in Sagittarius, you know, Saturn's kind of like a stick. It's a structure. In Sagittarius, the story-stirring stick. It's who's stirring the cauldron.
And then if you want to extend that imagery, which I love, we could just really add more components.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, what is being put into the cauldron is that magnificent configuration of Venus and Mars, Chiron and Neptune, all there joined together in Pisces. Can't see Chiron or Neptune, but they're there with and Venus and Mars in Pisces, and adding to the brew the access to ecstatic states,
yeah,
to celestial vision, to the heart of the female essence of the one reality that stirs our souls and opens our hearts, and adding that drug, as it were, that music, as it were, into the cauldron, and that's what we can see in the sky. Meanwhile, the full moon, Jupiter, the expansion of the full moon right there with Jupiter with Spica, it's bringing in that power of the sacred feminine at the same time.
That's great. Well said, lad. The access to ecstatic states, that's clearly the way to go. Everybody stock up on your meditation practices and or your entheogenic supply or both. Right.
It's like turning the gatherings into Dionysian parties.
Yes. Yes. You know, and the sacrament of autonomy, I think that's also part of the Uranus thing, you know, to see everyone connected to their own wise guiding dynamic, and the sacrament of autonomy, which is the antidote to colonialism and sneaky empire and everything, all of that. But yes, the access to ecstatic states is, here we are. And that means, you know, from, well, we can go back to Chiron and the Asclepions and also the Eleusinian mysteries, which were entheogenic. The Asclepion's pretty much more like rhodiola root tea, adaptogen. But we know that humans in the past, you know, would gather, you know, at times of personal or collective crisis to access ecstatic states and larger wisdom in dream form. It lives in our mythological historic DNA. We know this, and so that's also kind of part of what you're delineating too. These receptors in our psyches are like, right, crisis, time for dreaming, ecstatic states, dancing, and being pragmatic mystics. That this has a real, and then doing stuff inspired by, you know, vision and inspired by altruism and compassion, really, that we're all in this dream together as the antidote.
Mm-hmm. The one of the main things I'm involved with these days, in addition to just the astrology of our school, most everything else I'm doing is in attempting to reawaken the DNA that still is there in us and alive, that spans many, many, many more thousands of years, we could say 190,000 years, rather than the aberration of the last 5,000, when human beings were more used to being cooperative, collaborative, and sharing, and a greater equality of masculine and feminine. Our indigenous souls are not what we have been taught to believe we've been for the last 5,000 years.
That's great. Hold this important thought and the ensuing paragraphs. I was so compelled and fascinated by your conversing that we just blew right past our half-hour break. Anyway, we're going to take a very short break. It's the usual Taj Mahal. Our guest today is Daniel Jamario, and we are doing our pre-inauguration augury. We're inaugurating the guiding story. There we go, and we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasar and made his tawny cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show on KPFA. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and we are delighted to be hosting, fellow astro-mytho-guiding meta-narrative artist Daniel Jamario from his world headquarters in the Philippines. There we are. We've been using that great Taj Mahal break music for the last 20 years, but it's always great, but it had a particular kind of resonance to segue back to where you were, to reawaken our DNA, 190,000 years, greater equality time period, and the magic mojo, again, the Taj Mahal, Ishmael Reed, you know, mumbo jumbo, you know, New Orleans funkiness, the High John the Conqueror, the trickster redeemer of the South, Marie Laveau, you know, all the mythic figures that have kept soulful magic New Orleans, you know, alive. We're calling on all of that now, you know, right? So yeah, so there you were, yeah, 190,000 years, yeah, right, rather than the last 5,000. Feel free to resume your narrative there.
Well, much of this has come about from the amount of times I've gone myself or taken groups to places like Ireland and Scotland and even the Wiltshire area and Wales. where it was one of the areas of the world where the megalithic and the Neolithic Golden Age lasted for quite a long time. And others have written about this. Obviously, Irene Eisler, who invented who coined the word gyalony. But now more and more and more DNA research and archaeological and anthropological investigations show that the way that human beings had been, I mean, 190,000 years ago, we're actually the same human beings all the way back about 200,000 years, the same DNA. But the much longer period, we were cooperative, we were collaborative, and there's no sense of there being this ranking of the archies that, you know, that came in later, matriarchy, patriarchy, and so on. And we're led to believe that what's happened in the last 5,000 years is some kind of evolution. To me, it's only evolution in the sense that it becomes the logjam to get us to wake up and go forward, but we still need to have a renaissance and a reincorporation of this much longer story in our blood, in our DNA, of cooperation and collaboration and non-ranking between men and women. More and more and more evidences of coming true, you know, a lack of warfare, more and more burials are being found in these ancient sites of men and women being buried together, stuff like that, you know.
And animals fully honored. Yeah.
And I notice how it works when you take people there. That's like they can really connect into it. I mean, you don't have to go to those places, but every place where you are, there's some connection back to our indigenous soul, to the way we were prior to what I like to call the triple aberration: hierarchical patriarchy, monotheistic religions, and patrilineal family descent. You put those three things together, and you get the situation we find ourselves at. But I'm not negative about it. It's not like I'm looking at this going to be a huge disaster. Although we have no idea what great mystery has in mind, but we still can connect in with much larger and longer elements of who we really are that still exist within us.
Yes. And I love you. Yes, before the Arkies, and as a friend quips, you know, the only Arkie we like is Malarkey Arkie. Malarkey Arkie, there we go. And yes, and going backwards, the way I've been thinking, and see, Venus, again, Neptune today, let's say Venus guides us to intimacy with all the powerful dreams and myths and music and poetry and ecstatic states, absolutely. And the way I've been thinking about, you know, Neptune and Pisces is as though the backstage gods convene and say, we're going to have to either kill the humans or heal them. Okay, let's try healing them first. Let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship available for fresh expression. Again, as you delineate, you know, poetry, music, myths, dancing, reverie, entheogenic states, all of that, available as a kind of crucial download, and that's really a call going forth to everyone's heart and soul right now. Going, what do you love? What do you love? And that's an important clue. And how do you want to become more like what you love to be its agent? And what piece of music or poetry or myth, you know, do you have an affinity with? You know, and how is each person kind of called upon to bring it alive through a fresh, unique, and vernacular expression right now, exactly as you say, you know, there's the dominator, horror, and then the rising renaissance, you know, that it isn't just us humans, it's the 190,000, you know, sacramental kinship of real equality, and yeah, as you say, like in Malta and in sites in Peru, no evidence of fortification, no evidence of war, great, star celestial alignments, and thousands of musical instruments, and you know, and honoring the dead, and in Malta, it's the dead city discovered under somebody's floor that goes on for miles is got the sleeping, this beautiful statue of the sleeping maiden. She's dreaming the world into being, you know, in this, so all of these, yeah, the mysteries that so want to be that are available, and the dreaming states, you know, that you know. I guess the dream's available. And when you say Chiron, you know, is a little planetoid that really exists. And I do want to say, in keeping with my Chiron guide, Dale O'Brien, because he says, oh, everybody says Chiron was the wounded healer, and we go, Chiron rolls his eyes because he's so bored with that limitation. It's yeah. Like, yes, he could transform, you know, poison into tonic, that's good. But the rest of the myth is so much more important. He's a mentor centaur. And he starts the school for future cultural heroes and goes on and on. But for our purposes right now, you know, he's the founder of the Asclepions throughout the ancient world, where people really went, again, throughout human history, we have mythic figures founding real things, magnetizing metaphor into matter, mojo, it's going on now. So people really went there, they would drink rhodiola root tea, they would intend to have a dream, they'd have an amazing dream, they'd realize they'd only have the power of the dream if they gave it expression, they'd write a poem, participate in a play, make something beautiful, and then having expressed it artfully, they would go back to their communities as kind of seed Renaissance people. So that all really happened, right? So that's kind of part of our nearest exit maybe behind us. You know, let's go backwards. Although, you know, as you say, it's in our mythological DNA. We know this. We've been colonized to go, oh, myth, astrology, and it's like that's the colonized mind. And I think
it started to resurface again when Chiron was in Pisces in the late 60s.
That's true. And then it got smushed a little bit, and now it's back. And that's also part of Standing Rock for people to, ingeniously, appropriately replace the word protester with protector. Good work, because protest, right, comes from testes, right, and it means to affirm by grabbing your balls. That's where that word comes from. Protect, really great, and also the unabashed saying, water is sacred, and we're standing up for Mother Earth. Right, no shame anymore, team, about, you know, the re-wedding of activism and animism, and that idea of, you know, cooperating with wind, water, humans, people, sanity, dreams, you know, all of that. It's like, you know, it's really, yeah, well, I was going to say, we're getting on light.
If I might weave in something completely harmonious with what you're bringing forth here, if we go to what's happening with Venus, for the first time I don't have the exact figure, but we do know that when the Sumerians were doing their descent of Inanna into the underworld ceremonials, that would happen every 8 years, it would be when Venus rose as morning star at the spring equinox. It does turn out when this particular cycle we're in now, Venus will rise as a morning star at the spring equinox. And this is very intriguing because it's the Aries overtone, the Aries symbol of the current the unfolding Venus cycle that will begin at spring equinox. Venus cycle that begins spring equinox. This Aries expression of the feminine is the protector of the cosmic order, the protector of the people, the protector of the of every. It's the warrior Amazon that is goes forth to protect the people, the land, and the water. So this feminine protector symbol is going to be the most important one for the 584-day period following Venus rising as morning star at the spring equinox. How about that one?
That's great. And again, we want our guiding story, because I was talking to, you know, kind of medium conventional people in D.C. going, well, what's the point of the women we're talking? What's the point of the Women's March? They don't have a story. Is it women's right? What's the thing? And we go, well, there is a story. We do want to give it. You just kind of delineated the thing going, rah, rah, rah. We want the story. And I want to toss it back to you, this Jupiter Uranus awakening, again, a call to all of us to cultivate story craft. We love the word craft. Love the word craft. Because we, you know, in an election, you know, just this cuckoo thing, we all, you know, collectively, complicitously in a way, got smoked on what should be our strong suit of storytelling and metaphor, and we let the Dementors do the toxic mimic of it, and you know, the cunning doofus, demonically possessed doofus known as Donald Trump. You know, I do think I like the metaphor possession. I do think it really works. The cunning retrovirus demon. But you know, he was hoovering up kind of multi-level marketing talk, going, I will bring to you the change you've wanted since you were born, and people just, they went for that toxic mimic thing, and Hillary had no story. She had no story craft. She had no story craft, and that's when I did have that terrible moment outside Cleveland at the Republican convention, which I, for a moment, I knew. I'm like, oh no, oh, Bernie had a story. Hillary doesn't have story craft. Oh, we're getting smoked. Oh, there we go. But so, you know, so it behooves us, again, Jupiter Uranus, for everybody not only to, by affinity, cultivate, you know, art and beauty and forming partnerships with what one loves, but also story crafting, because there's a huge opportunity that we want to be, as Edward Snowden said, don't be frightened, be ready. And, you know, the razzmatazz swindle, soon there'll be a great deal of released energy as many people feel, understand, they've been conned, right? But that will be kind of illusion. But it wants, again, to cross borders so that we have the story of the Renaissance going, come this way, absolutely, you know, what you really want. Yes, welcome aboard, even if you voted for Trump, or especially if you did, you know, come over here. You've been snookered, now we want, you know, and Obama did a great thing in his speech. I mean, I know we go, yes, the drones were terrible, the treating of the whistleblowers was terrible, many other great things, but he did a call to citizens, you know, He did a Br'er Rabbit. He you know, called the children home. He began by saying, you know, we're all kin. And he brought up Atticus Finch, and then he said science and reason matter, and then he did this you know, extraordinary thing, and it was astrologically really intriguing, although, you know, he invited everybody to a renaissance, and then he did do warning. He said, and we must be aware of fascism and tyranny. Long pause during World War II, but he said, you know, and a call to step up and become citizens, or citizen trickster, and accepting responsibility to be a citizen. And then, as 22 Virgo was rising in Washington, which is the U.S. Neptune, the soul of the country, and his Mars, he did this beautiful homage to his wife and his daughters. Very strong contrast going on here. It was manifest family kinship, and then he ended by, you know, manifest gracious gratitude. And it's like, no, good for you, lad. You did the thing. You know, you know. Again, the calling forth. You know, and he's, you know, he's. We're all in this thing together. And there are, you know, we speak to the good of people. We do critique and go, you know, but we do want to. I think this is part of the art form of speaking to the good, inviting the good, the altruistic, the dreamer in everybody, and really spiraling that forth as a Renaissance invitation. Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons why I love collaborating with you from slightly different directions, we have the same view on this. I started out as a Rajarian back in the early 1970s. And from during the entire time I've been an astrologer, it's been 47 years now, I feel that it is our responsibility, even if the person we're talking to is not at a level of being able to implement it, that it's our responsibility to tell them their best story, their life purpose theme, the reason why they were born, what could occur through that series of conditions that show up on their individual horoscope. Whether they achieve that or not, I mean, that's not our responsibility, but I do think it's our responsibility to let them know about it. And that whole theme weaves into the purpose, our purpose in our school. Sure, we can be realistic. We can look at the objective reality. But someone has to have relationship with the providing energies, you know, whether we look at it in terms of these the animal essences, but in as astrologers, it would have to do with the planetary essences and what they symbolize. And we form relationship with them, and we say, okay, we know we're not in control, but here's what we would like, you know, maybe the least amount of suffering, maybe the greatest number of people being able to achieve their life purpose themes, and to, as much as we can, intervene and have a reciprocal relationship with great mystery. I mean, we need to be as awake as much as it's trying to inform us. And I think that telling that bigger story and that more idealistic sense of what is possible, both tapping into the past, certainly, but being able to create the highest potential and the best story for all of us. And I think we share that view. We're activating our better angels, or however you want to say it.
Absolutely, you know, and again, the great Celtic phrase to dree one's weird, which means to play one's role in destiny, and you know, and yes, when we do readings for self and collect, for humans, individuals, and collective, you know, aspiring to not impose a narrative, but to offer, you know, the story, and in a way that resonates, you know, guiding everyone to their own autonomy, which was the original thing, what the Sufis say, and Neil Douglas Klotz said, the most criminal mistranslation in the Old Testament is when it says, you know, and God gave humans dominion over all the animals and the thing, and he goes, that's not the word at all. The way the Sufis tell the story is, you know, God is handing out tasks. And he goes, well, here's one, to help guide all creatures to their essential nature. And the wolves said they were busy, and the humans said, yeah, we'll take that. You know, and so the word actually used meant not dominion, but guiding and encouraging to own essential nature. And we go, yeah, that thing. And so you know, we're right there, right? It's dominion versus autonomy. You know, and that's why we love the trickster. And So dreeing are weird. And again, each, you know, and again, you know, the initiation in a simple way, you know, the initiation of Mars in a simple way, is, you know, we need you. You know, we need everyone. Everyone's a unique experiment. We need the medicine of everyone now. You know, and we need you to help build Stonehenge. We need you in the Renaissance. We need you to do this thing. And it's such a simple thing, really, distilled initiation, as an invitation that you are honored, reverent, you have something that everybody needs. That kind of spiraling out, and that.
And I think that's the highest gift of each year, each of the times when Jupiter, as the year star, moves through Libra. That's what its highest gift is. Of collaboration, everyone around the round table, a lateral horizontal relationship with equals, sovereign autonomous individuals. It's not like the king above them all or something, but it's a collaborative, gilanic experience of individuals learning more about themselves through another in cooperation and non-ranking. I mean, to me, that's what Jupiter and Libra is trying to inform us about.
That's beautiful. And a kind of reawakening, yes, the collaborative council. It's like with the Shift Network, you know, again, they are incredible get it done structure. They're my Saturn transit, I'm their Uranus transit. But they were calling, you know, each 7-week thing that I'll be starting in February, but, you know, they call it a module. And I go, no, I'm going to call it a council. It's 7 councils, not modules. And they're like, well, okay. But yeah, the collaborative council, you know, comprised of shining, radiant individuals. And this is, you know, part of how all mythological language and all astrology and all metaphysics kind of moves through conditioning. You know, the 11th house, you know, used to have this poopy title called the House of Hopes and Wishes, right? Because it's about equal gathering. And for some centuries, the idea of equal autonomous gathering was merely a hope or a wish, until now. And now, you know, and see, there's a, you know, when you delineate, you know, the Pluto part of the grand square with the full moon and the thing. But remember, yeah, again, this beautiful thing, which is, you know, Mars in Pisces and Chiron and Venus, and they are 60-degree creative angle to Pluto, pragmatic mysticism, the mission to dive into the richness of our heritage, and not just humans. The wisdom of, wolves and coyotes, and I love Saturn trining Uranus, and wolves and coyotes are mating, giving them an evolutionary advantage of having a supportive wolf pack that encourages the unique coyote within all of us, and that's how I want to model.
Yeah, one thing that I just love about that is that writers and thinkers like Martin Pachtel and David Abram and people like that, they always make the point, and I think it's completely true, that humans have gained more from animals as far as how to become an authentic human being than we ever have from other human beings. That it's the injection of these transmissions from the animal world that makes us fully human, actually. And if all we ever do is just connect with other humans and the projections of our minds, that is to say our technology, we can't really grow as what an authentic human being is.
Well, that makes sense out of the mystery in which we every now and then contemplate the strange weird of our lives. And I go, I've lived with Stella Coyote. She's almost 19. Longer than I've lived with any human. It's kind of like a fairy tale going, huh, look at that. But she is, her mom was a dog and her dad was a coyote. So I've been honored. And well, it's been a reciprocal challenge and blessing between us, and may all our relations with animals and plants be of evolutionary blessing and benefit to and fro equally. And Stella and I, and I do want to just do a little shout out to Stella, because she's still very, very kick butt, and she did get a bad diagnosis. She's got a limp. She has a tumor that fractured her shoulder, and the doctor said, just call it a day, and when the pain's too much, but gave us mega painkillers, and she didn't like those. The mega painkillers kind of removed her access to her spirit. It was very clear, and I go, all right, we're not doing that anymore. We're going medical cannabis, and she goes, I like this, and she seems to be getting better. She seems to be getting better. We're just rooting for her. Just a little shout out, medical cannabis over pharmaceuticals. For everybody, a round of entheogens. All right, we're in our last moments here. This is so fun, Daniel. We must keep going here. But we're inaugurating a guiding story no matter what. Okay, we can do it, team. Water's sacred. Any last spiraling wish you want to put out to our dedicated listenership team of allies?
Well, I just want to continue this growing imagery of the cauldron and putting things in the cauldron. We've added the Jupiter and Libra to it, the collaboration, the Gyalani. I love this, the stick, the Saturn stick.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we toss in lots of Piscean, Neptunian, and transcendent and ecstatic ingredients into it. We can add more things, more imagination.
Yes.
To that. Even those that are listening, doesn't have to be astrological symbolism.
No.
It can be just what other kinds of ingredients do you want to put into this cauldron? We know that we are not entirely in control, but we can ask.
Yes.
And suggest great mystery.
It's a collaborative dance.
Like,
and we can throw in things to the cauldron we want to be transformed and ladle out stuff. We throw in self-disparagement and ladle out defiant joy. And we throw in the hubris of humanism and ladle out, animism. Anyway, that's great. That's a delight to dance with you, Daniel DiMario. Thank you so much. We are in perpetual cahoots. That's really great. Thanks always to Timmy Olmsted in Washington, D.C., Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. And remember, better a trickster than a martyr be. Yip, 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 awoo, ruff, ruff, ruff. Thanks, Daniel. Thank you again.
You're my pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Be sure to catch Apex Express on KPFA. Apex Express is a weekly program following news and cultural events throughout Asia and the Pacific Islands. Find out about issues affecting Asian American and Pacific Islander communities locally and globally. Get on board the Apex Express Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. on KPFA.
Become a KPFA ally. a sustaining partner, the lifeblood of our station. At $10 or more a month, your gift goes further by providing KPFA with a stable source of income to support the programming you value. It's easy, and it provides a tax deduction. Plus, it helps us reduce the amount of time needed for on-air fund drives. To become an ally, go to kpfa.org and click support. Thank you.
Do you know what Area 941 is? It's KPFA.org's new podcasting space. This allows us to expand our programming with more on-demand programs so you can listen when you want or download them at any time. Area 941 is just another reason why people say, I heard it on KPFA.
You are listening